5 is really necessary.
Is this anything else besides in chapter 4, paragraph 10, where it says about concealment and about his light? Does it say anything about that anywhere else?
Everywhere.
No, I'm saying like from the past 2 days, because I remember seeing something that I wanted to show you, but I can't find it now.
I think it starts in chapter 2, and we have here, and it comes up over there.
Oh, yeah. Did it come up yesterday at all? With the world? No?
Okay, now, part two is really about providence. Providence as a particular subject, as the backup. Providence means how God runs the world. Providence is not a word for a capacity or power of God. Providence is a word for an activity of God. Providence is what he really does, not what he can do. Now, he says, it's clear and known that everything that is created, upper beings and lower beings, were created because the highest wisdom saw necessity and use for the ultimate goal of the creation. You know, we could spend days and days just on particular words, but let me just give you a little clue. Necessity and use. You ask, why is that? There are two types of answers you can get. You can get an answer that it is necessary, you need it for something, or you can get an answer that it's useful for this thing, although you could do it with other things, but this is useful. Both of those are answers. Strictly speaking, it's enough to say that it's doing the job. Somebody says, well, why did you pick this to do the job? Why didn't you pick that to do the job? The response ought to be, why shouldn't I use this? You have any particular reason why I should use the other thing? Now, if someone has a reason, you say, look, the other thing's cheaper, works faster, has less side effects, has less dangerous, so then you have to give an explanation. But if you have two tools that equally well do the job, and using one of them to ask, why didn't you use the other one? As I've told you on other occasions, that question is not free. You have to explain why you're asking. Why shouldn't you use this one? What's wrong with this one? So when it said that God created this for such and such a purpose, when people say, but why couldn't he have used something else? The answer may be he could have, but just used this one. Why shouldn't he use this one? In order to have a question that requires an answer, what you need to do is show why that something else would be better in some respect. Otherwise, if it's doing the useful job, then that's enough reason to explain why he created it. So you don't have to have a necessary condition. Sufficient condition is enough. This is, this confusion is a confusion you find over and over again. People say, you got to benefit from somewhere. And they say, you should be grateful. You say, well, why should I be grateful for that? If he hadn't done it, somebody else would have done it. So I didn't need him. That's a confusion. A person who's in an accident, and he's taken into the emergency room, and the doctor on duty saves his life. Now, we say to him, you know, you really ought to thank the doctor, he saved your life. He said, why? If he hadn't been on duty, somebody else would have been on duty. And he would have saved my life. It didn't have to be him to save my life. Somebody else would have saved it if he wasn't there. Yeah, but this is the one who saved your life, you know. It's not required that it be necessary, it's required only that it's sufficient. He did the job, he got the job done, he owes something.
Yeah. Yeah, but what, just as an explanation, like I want an explanation why God's reasoning is, why his reasoning is better. I want
better
to understand than the alternative. If you're saying you have two.
It may not be better.
Well,
why must it be better?
Right, so that's when someone asks, why are you doing that, why are you using that one? It's not necessary. It's not necessarily a good answer to say, well, why is the other, why, you give me a reason why the other one's better. I just want to know why your reasoning is
No, no, there's no question of better or worse here. Why am I using this? Because it does the job. Now, I believe I've answered the question. It does the job. So you say, well, why aren't you using the other thing to do the job? The answer may be, no reason. I picked one, and it does the job.
And that's, things aren't just done for no reason.
Here you have a reason. It does the job.
Yeah, but why won't the other one do a good enough job?
It definitely will do. But my interest isn't doing the job.
Yeah, but it's not. It doesn't work like that, though. There aren't. There's always going to be a reason why you're going to choose one over the other.
Why?
Because you don't just choose. I mean, unless you're choosing randomly, and people don't usually choose randomly.
They choose randomly when there's no difference between the options vis-a-vis what you're trying to accomplish.
I don't know.
It's like the Jewish mother gets her son two ties. When he shows up for Hanukkah, he says, what, you didn't like the other tie?
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Right? Okay, I have my two cards. They both came back from the shop. They're sitting there. One is good for long-distance driving, and the other isn't. Both are good for driving short distances. I drove a short distance. Why did I pick the one I picked? No reason. I could have picked the other one. They're equally good for short distances. And I picked this one. I didn't have any reason why I didn't pick the other one.
So you're saying that they're both 100% exactly the same.
If they aren't, then you should be able to pick out a feature and say, look, in this respect, this one that you didn't use is better for the job than that one, so how come you gave it up? Then you have a question. Then you paid the price of the question. But just to ask why you didn't use the other one, Maimonides goes further. Over here, I think we would say there's probably a hidden reason. Maimonides says, you'll ask, why are there two daily offerings in the temple? Two animals. So, Maimonides says, and if there were three, wouldn't you ask why are there three? And if there was one, wouldn't you ask why is there one? And if there were six, wouldn't you ask why is there six? Then you have no question. Because you have no reason to think one number is better than another number. And you're just asking. I don't have to answer that. Once you agree that there have to be animal sacrifices, you've got that as a general principle, so it's got to be some number. So I picked two.
And there's a reason for those two that were picked.
So, because you believe that they aren't equal. And you may not know what's unequal about them, but you believe they aren't equal. Fine. But it's all based on the assumption that they aren't equal. Now, with the animals, I would say, you're wasting resources. So the natural choice is one, unless you have reasons, but then you have a reason. Right? Why waste resources? The question isn't free. You can't just ask why did you use this rather than that. If you know it's doing your job. Now, Ramchal here uses two words. It's just, when you meditate on what he writes, it's just unbelievable. He says, everything, all the things that are created, because the highest wisdom saw necessity and use. That opens up the two categories. Some things may be necessary to accomplish a goal. Some things may be useful, and usefulness may be enough for the general purpose of all creation. And all their laws and all their natural properties were established, another word, the way the highest almost wisdom saw was appropriate, for the intention that each particular created thing is supposed to satisfy. And the same thing is true about how long they exist. Each one for the purpose they're supposed to serve. Each one will be kept in existence for that period of time. Now, the picture here is a picture of God addressing each creature, addressing each thing that's created. I want to say briefly something just to give you a little background to hopefully immunize you against a whole complicated, frustratingly subtle and I think unnecessary discussion that many people go through.
Yay.
There is a discussion of what's called general providence and particular providence. Hashgacha Klolis and Hashgacha Pratis. It's so bad that there's a disagreement about whether or not there's a disagreement. That's how bad it is. Some people say that the medieval authorities disagree about this matter, and other people say that the medieval authorities don't disagree about this matter. It's that bad. Now, I'm going to skip. I'm not going to go through all the sources with you and everything else. You know, if you want to share on it, you can get it from Betty. He's been through it in great detail. But here's the key. When you talk about God's providence, there are two different subjects. Two different subjects under the heading of God's providence. And it's crucial, whenever you have a discussion, to keep clear what it is you're talking about. One subject is the extent of his providence. How far does it go? Does his providence attach to every detail? Every beat of the wing of a mosquito, each beat, there it goes, beep, 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 beep. Each beat, does God's providence attach down to every tiny detail of existence? Or maybe not. Maybe God creates things and gives them general laws and lets them run on their own. And from time to time, interferes to bring about effects that he feels that are necessary, but the rest of the time lets it go by itself. God goes on semi-vacation, you know, just letting the thing run on its own. How far does his providence go? That's one question. The other question is, when God exercises his providence, for what reason does he do it? What is the goal in this particular exercise of his providence? What's he trying to accomplish? These are two different subjects. One is extent, and the other is purpose. Now, these terms, general providence and specific providence, it makes a world of difference if you think that those terms lie on the side of extent or if you think those terms lie on the side of purpose. If you think those terms, general and specific, lie on the side of extent, then you have a picture that God's providence extends generally to the world as a whole, setting up general laws, and then his particular providence attaches to only selected items among the creation as a whole. And you have the picture of God on semi-vacation. If you shift those terms, general and particular, over to the side of purpose, legal on extent, then you have an entirely different picture. The picture you get is this: God's providence in extent goes everywhere to everything, down to the tiniest detail. Each mote of dust that is dancing in the sunbeam, each dust mote as it dances is a function of God's individual providence for that mote of dust. Extent is equal everywhere. People, Jews, non-Jews, plants, flowers, you know, mosquitoes, dust, space-time, whatever you like, virtual particles and Heisenberg energy, whatever it is, down to every possibility, the extent is equal all of them. And when you talk about general and specific providence, what you're talking about is the purposes for which God exercises his providence. General providence will mean that God has a purpose for a category, a purpose for a class, a species. The purpose attaches only to the class, to the category, and the individual members of the category are indifferent with respect to that purpose. Let's say God wants there to be squirrels. He wants a category of squirrels. Maybe someday we'll import some to Israel so it'll be a little more amusing around here. It's so dull and boring. All the trees sit there and do nothing. So he wants there to be squirrels. But whether, for the sake of preserving the species of squirrels, this squirrel lives and that squirrel dies, or the opposite, there's no purpose. It's not reflected in the purpose. So it would mean God's providence decrees. This is another example of what I was talking about before. God's providence decrees that this squirrel dies and that squirrel doesn't die, but not because there's a purpose in this squirrel dying rather than that one. The ultimate purpose could have been fulfilled just as well as that squirrel died and this one lived. Because the purpose is only that the species should continue to exist. That's God's general providence, where the purpose attaches to a class, and the individuals in the class don't reflect the individual fortunes of members of the class don't matter. Versus specific providence, where the providence attaches to the individual for the sake of some effect on that individual. The purpose is related to the individual, not to a class. Now, I believe that the latter picture is correct. that in terms of extent, the extent is uniform and universal. God's providence extends to every detail in the world. Not only do I believe that it's true, but I believe that it's not controversial. I side with those who hold there is no argument about this in the medieval authorities, and I am prepared to do battle for those who think that there is a controversy. My belief is that when you talk about general and specific providence, you're only talking about purpose. That there are various purposes for which providence is exercised, and sometimes the purpose involves the group, and sometimes the purpose involves the individual. So, for example, and then it depends on which purposes they are. The one very narrow purpose is protection. God may exercise providence so that X will be protected and preserved, saved from dangers that might destroy it. The general opinion about that, you see, is that God exercises the providence of protection for, now your helpful friend, the English translators will say species, but species here doesn't mean biology, doesn't mean 20th century evolutionary biology. Kinds, types of creatures, and great tzaddik, great righteous people, will get providence that preserves them individually from danger. That is to say, the purpose for which the providence is exercised is to preserve them from danger. Preservation from danger is an individual providence for great tzaddikim, and it's a providence for types of creatures where it's a general providence. It doesn't attach to individuals. Then you have reward and punishment. Reward and punishment is an individual providence for every human being. Every human being is registered uniquely and individually in terms of his actions for the sake of reward and punishment. No other creatures are registered in that way. And then you may have other various offshoots. But the distinction between general and specific is only a matter of purpose, not a matter of extent. Now, in this paragraph, Ramchal, as far as I know, never discusses this controversy that you have among the medievals. He never makes explicit reference to it. But here, in this paragraph, can I nail it 100%? Maybe not. But the sense of the paragraph, as I read it, is that each individual creature, not categories, not species, not types, but each individual creature is created for a particular purpose, and it's given the properties that are necessary, and its existence is maintained as long as is necessary in order for it to serve that purpose. Especially the idea with the existence being necessary, he's not talking about species there. Many species have been in existence as long as mankind has existed, and they haven't disappeared. It sounds to me like he's talking about the individuals, and each one is put in its place, and its existence is maintained until it fulfills its purpose. Now, as I say, its purpose may be only to contribute in some way or other to the goal of the species. That's all. That's not an individual purpose. But that would be general. All the Kabbalists held the position that I'm telling you, that the extent is universal and uniform. It goes down to the tiniest detail without any exception. All the Kabbalists held that, so I know that's his view. It would be inconceivable for him to take a different view. And I say that's the sense of this fact. Okay? Question? Okay. Fine. Yeah?
I'm just wondering about punishment reward, because two very general terms to me. Because a punishment for one person is a reward for another person. A reward could be, for example, money. A person that's given money, it might be a punishment and it might be a reward.
Right. So I agree. So what's going to come out of that? Reward and punishment are relative to the person who's receiving it.
Okay.
That's quite true.
Okay.
And so, you know, what does the masochist say to the sadist? Hits me. What does the sadist say back?
No.
Sorry,
Yeah, okay. That's the kind kind of jokes that we told when we were kids. Nice, innocent, tricky, definitional jokes.
Could you say the difference between the two is that you're separating into purpose and
extent.
And extent. Could you say that it's really, once you've got that extent, so purpose is not, maybe you could just say it's just in terms of like how much you care. More of a quality of problem rather than splitting it in terms of purpose. And that quality will be dependent on like more would be dependent on the purpose. But the real difference is the quality of, because there's still obviously some sort of problems going on. So when you say purpose, you're actually not almost changing what you're saying. Could you say the extent is different because the purpose is different?
Let's understand. We're not guessing here. And we're not hypothesizing or theorizing here. We're not floating ideas to see which ones the committee will accept. Right? We're describing how God told us He runs the world. So it's not a question of what you could say. It's a question of, is that what He said, or isn't that what He said?
I'm saying, isn't that the same thing, really, just more specific even?
No, I don't think so. I mentioned, I don't know if you were here or not, in Ma'amar al-Chokhma, he says, God could have created things and let them run on their own. He's capable of that. He just didn't. He didn't do it that way. He makes them totally dependent upon His creative power, instant by instant. But He didn't have to do it that way. Similarly here, He could have created laws and let things run along according to those laws. He could have done it that way. He just didn't.
No. I'm saying after we understand what we understand here. Yeah. But this is the way it works. You have the purpose and you've got the extent.
Right.
Could you say a way to say it, just I wonder if I understand it correctly, way to say it, the purpose is just that over here you have more hashkafa. And why? Because of the purpose.
I don't know what more means. If God is controlling every event down to the beat of the wing of the mosquito, so what's more or less of it? There's total causation on everything.
So then what is the difference of purpose? What's the distinction between purpose and extent? As I'm saying, maybe the difference is the quality of Hashkafa and amount.
The difference between extent and purpose is the difference between apples and spaceships. I mean, they have no connection between them. They're two entirely different categories. One is how far does it go, and the other is what purpose does it serve. There's not even enough of a connection to ask what the difference is. Right? They're not in the same ballpark.
But if you say that there's no purpose, for this, there's no specific purpose for this.
That's right.
Therefore, there's a certain kind of hashgacha that doesn't go onto that.
No, that it's just that a certain type of purpose for hashgacha doesn't go onto it. Not that a certain kind doesn't. There are no kinds of hashgacha. It's all uniform. That's why I say uniform, universal. I use those two words over and over again. Uniform. Uniform means it's all the same thing. It's direct divine causation down to every detail.
So where's the difference?
The difference is only in the reason for which things happen. They'll ask, why did this person die and why did this squirrel die? You'll get qualitatively different answers. The person died because he's finished his task on earth, his neshama is already perfect, he's ready to go to Gan Eden. And the squirrel died because it contributed as offspring to the next generation, and what we want is for the species to continue. I don't need its services anymore to make it continue, so it's time for the next generation. So in the case of the squirrel, it's for keeping the species alive. And for the sake of the tzaddik, it's for his particular career that he died.
It's all in the reasoning. The difference between purpose and extent is in the reasoning in terms of how the hashkacha should work out. The hashkacha is all the same thing.
So right, so leave it out. Once you understand that the extent is uniform and universal, it drops out. It's the same everywhere. So it's a non-subject. Anything that's the same everywhere is a non-subject. You don't talk about it anymore. No, you can't use it to understand any particular thing because it's the same everywhere.
Okay.
So then the only thing left to talk about is the purpose for which it's being exercised.
And that will define whether you would have general or specific.
Because general means the purpose is only for the group and not for the particular individual in the group. And specific means the purpose is for this particular item alone. Okay. That's what general and specific mean, according to my way of explaining it.
So you can have general and specific purpose. It could be different depending on which species or which group of things.
Sure, sure. I'll give you just one example. Maimonides gives, and he's supposed to be the believer in, he's the one about whom there's a controversy, whether there's a controversy. So he gives the following example. One guy becomes very rich, and he builds a castle in the forest, and he puts a big wall around the castle. And years later, a tzaddik is tramping through the forest, and he's tired, he's hot, and he sees the wall, and he says, "Oh, wow, look at that." And he sits down in the shade of the wall and rests his back against the wall, and it serves him for a few hours, and then he goes on. Maimonides says, it could very well be that God arranged that the guy should become rich, so he built the castle with the wall, so that years later, the tzaddik will have a place to rest his back. Now, it's clear from the example that the guy getting rich is not an accident. The guy getting rich is not an accident. The hashgacha applied to him specifically that he should get rich. But what? Not for his sake. But for the sake of his building a wall so the tzaddik will have a place to rest his back. So if you ask about the extent, guy getting rich is not an accident, nothing's an accident. It's all God's providence. If you ask the purpose is the specific providence on the tzaddik, that he should have a place for his back to rest. That's the.
Could you have general and specific?
You mean two purposes operating at the same time? Probably. The purposes aren't exclusive. You can fulfill several purposes simultaneously.
I mean on a single group.
Listen again. You're talking general and specific is only about
purpose. That's right.
So now a person can do an action which will satisfy several purposes simultaneously, can he not? It makes me money, and it makes me stronger, and it gains me a good reputation, all in the same action. Huh? So what you're asking in terms of God's providence is, could something that God does satisfy several of his purposes at the same time? I don't see why not. So as long as you remember to translate it into purpose, then the answer falls out not too difficult. Okay, then he reviews the fact that human beings are different because of free will. Yeah, that's what I told you already. Good, now we're up to chapter 2. I'm going to say this now, and when we get to chapter 3, I'll say it again. Chapter 2 and chapter 3 divide up providence into two subjects, two discussions, and the difference between them is fairly subtle. People are different, and they go through life in different ways. However, chapter 2 is about the general categories that are set up, categories that are in principle available for everybody, although, from experience, we know that some people end up in this category and some people end up in that category, but the categories are general categories of histories, life, development, events, experiences, outcomes, how they are available for people, and then what happens when people go their various ways. That's chapter 2. Chapter 3 talks about the way in which providence will take a person and impose upon him as an individual some particular conditions or some particular challenge where the activity of providence is labeled to the individual, addressed to the individual, specifically. That's the difference between chapter 2 and chapter 3. Chapter 2 is general categories which people fit into, and different people may fit into different categories by virtue of the kinds of lives that they lead. So, but the categories are general categories. I guess, theoretically, even, you could imagine everybody fitting into one category, not going over to the other category. It just doesn't happen that way. Chapter 3 talks about God imposing on individuals unique characteristics, which means that people are already separated out from the beginning into different conditions. That's the difference between the two chapters. A very abstract philosophical difference. Okay. Now, the key element in man's career, as we said over and over again, is free will. The goal of our existence here is that through our own actions, we should perfect ourselves and respect ourselves so that we can qualify for the world to come. Free will requires that we be pulled in simultaneously different directions. That's why we have a good inclination and an evil inclination. The choice that we make is a choice between... Let me back up and say it right. The choices for which we are created are the choices we make between good and evil. That's what we're created for. I have heard people say over and over again that you only have free will when you're choosing between good and evil. Students have reported to me that teachers have said things like this. I don't know any reason for that. I don't know any reason for that. I don't know any philosophical reason for it. I don't know any source for it. Maybe I'm just ignorant. No one's ever shown me a source for it. If you think about how you experience it, I made a promise. Shall I keep the promise or shall I go to the ball game? I really owe the person the promise. On the other hand, the ball game's a one in a chance, a lifetime chance. And I go back and forth, and I go back and forth, and I make a choice. What shall I do this afternoon? Read the book or play tennis? Oh, I love to play tennis, but I'm not feeling very energetic today. I'll probably read the book. If I read the book, I lose out on the exercise, and Joe's waiting for me to play tennis. I go back and forth, and back and forth, and I make the choice. To me, as I experience it, it feels roughly the same. I have two alternatives. I'm not sure what to do. I think about them. I worry about it a little bit, and then I make a choice. In the first case, it's good and evil. In the second case, it's trivial. It's, how to spend an afternoon. I don't see any reason to say that when you're choosing between two neutral alternatives, neither good nor bad, that it is a free choice. To me, however, that's not why we were created. We were not created to choose between reading books and playing tennis. It's just that once we have the power of free choice, we use it whenever there are alternatives open, and some of the alternatives are trivial. So I say, we were created for the choices we make between good and evil. Okay. Now, once you give people the capacity to choose between good and evil, then there are going to be people who choose evil. Yes, sir. It's definitely going to happen. And you'll have people who choose a little evil, and you have people who choose a lot of evil, and you have people who be so overwhelmingly evil that there's almost no good left. And then you'll face your first problem. Because the world to come has to be perfect. Which means that there can't be any evil in the world to come. What are we going to do with people who choose evil? And by choosing evil, internalizing into themselves, who create evil elements or evil characteristics in themselves, what are we going to do for those people so as to qualify the world to come as wholly good? That's the first problem. So there has to be a mechanism whereby people can get rid of the evil and get rid of the consequences of the evil so that when they go to the world to come, all that evil will be eliminated. Now, here, the world subdivides into two groups. And this is one of many principles. What I finished with today is not the whole story, but it just gives you the beginning of the story. There is a tiny, tiny group, 0.00001%, whose evil is so overwhelming, so saturated, so black, that they are disqualified from participating in the world to come. They're not capable of participating in the world to come. Remember, back at the beginning, chapter 2, where he said that there's a struggle between the soul and the body, And if the soul wins, then the body becomes spiritualized and sanctified. And if the soul allows the body to win, then the body drags the soul down. If the soul allows the body to win, it can come to a point where the soul becomes so materialized, so to speak, so attached to the material, that it can't relate to God anymore. Now, so for the 99.9999%, what we have to do is get rid of their failings, whatever they are, so that they can qualify for the world to come. For the 0.001%, they're not going to make it into the world to come. But they will have done something right. A few good things here and there. Those can't be ignored. They can't be ignored. Justice requires that every action you do be compensated appropriately. So those in the 0.001% who've done a few good things, those few good things have to be rewarded somehow.
Is this a prophetic statement?
It's a fact about the way the world is. No, it's not prophetic. We're talking about how the world is using these characters. And the 99.9999%, there has to be a mechanism to remove the evil from them so that they'll be qualified for the world to come. So now, the principle that he's expressing here, I told you, this is not the only principle there, a number to come. The principle that he's expressing here is this, that each person's actions divide up into two groups. The ones that determine his place in the world to come, place or non-place, and the rest. And the rest are handled here. The rest are handled here. So the 0.001%, who've done a few good things, those few good things have to be rewarded, they're rewarded here. And everybody else who's done some bad things, those bad things have to be taken care of here. Look now what happens. Those guys in the 0.001%, they're really pretty rotten, hey? They're so rotten, they're not going to make it into the world to come. They might do well here. They might do well here. Because they have to be compensated for the good things that they did. And the compensation is here. They have to be paid off. So they're going to be paid off here. And to the observer, it might appear that they're doing well. On the other hand, imagine in the 99.999% that there are some very great tzaddikim, people who are almost all white, with a few black splotches. Since they're going to go into the world to come, those black splotches have to be taken care of here. They might be suffering here. Their suffering here is meant to take off the effects of their transgressions so that when they leave the world, they're completely white. Already you have some explanation for why righteous people suffer and wicked people flourish. This is the beginning of that type of explanation. It's only one out of 11 principles that we'll have in this chapter and the next. It is the beginning of an insight. Because, and this is the general picture that we've had all the way through, because what happens is determined by the spiritual background. It isn't only determined by this world. This world doesn't exist by itself. As I said to you over and over again, when you do a mitzvah, you're building something behind. When you learn Torah, you're bringing down that highest energy. All of it depends upon how it interacts with that spiritual background, which you don't see, obviously. When a person asks, how come this wicked person is flourishing and that righteous person is suffering, he's looking only at this world. He's not taking into account how this particular episode in this person's history is related to all the other matters that are just as or more important. So this is the beginning of this... this explanation of why righteous people suffer. Yeah.
I don't think this is this forum anyway, but I mean, when I've discussed this with other friends who are less believing, maybe, and you mentioned, as soon as you mentioned like the world to come, then I'm sure you've had experiences with it also, that, you know, well, that's just a cop out answer, that there's justice in the end someday.
You know, it's sort of like this. you have a position, and somebody raises objections. It turns out that built into your position are answers to all the objections. So in their frustration that they can't find a good objection, they criticize the position that it has built-in answers for all the objections. In my intellectual experience, if you have a position that has an answer for all the objections, that's considered to be a virtue. You know, look how carefully the position was put together. Now, cop-out is only relevant if you say, you're clearly making it up. You made it up only to get out of this problem. You have no evidence that it exists. Then you could say that it's what's called an ad hoc hypothesis. You made it up only to answer this question. Well, then you have to see whether that's so or whether it isn't so, and whether or not they have reason to think that the system as a whole is justifiable. But to say it's just a cop-out might just as well say that when Bohr answered Einstein, Einstein said, how come if you do something here, it affects something over there? And Bohr said, you're forgetting the fact that it's all one system. And since it's all one system, wherever you touch the whole system, you say, that's just a cop-out. Because, look at that, you just answer the objection. Yeah, I answered the objection, so, that's good, that's not bad. So the system has built into it. Where you see this kind of thing as a cop-out is if I have a system, and then you raise an objection, I say, gosh, what am I going to do about that? I'll add something. I'll add something new. I'll add Q so it's able to answer you. That could be a cop-out. But the system starts out this way, right? So, it's not as if,
When you say there's 0.001 percent of people that are going to be so saturated in evil that they won't be able to go into the world to come, right? So that means that in the end of this world, it's not possible to not have those people, right?
No, let's say it's not possible. Let's say that experience teaches us that there can be such people and probably are such people.
Oh, so he's not saying there will be?
No, I told you. Let me go back to what I said about this chapter. This chapter sets up general categories. And the way the world is set up, people's histories can put them in this category or that. And it might very well be that some of the categories are empty. That could happen also. Just that you have to know, as a person goes, his actions may put him in this category or that category. Again, the difference between this chapter and that chapter is like this. We have a playing field. Everybody starts out at the beginning. And as they go, they fall into this hole, they go down that alleyway, or they take that turn. The playing field is open for everybody. Right? So the playing field is set up, and then people run through it, and they have various histories. Here we're describing the playing field. Next chapter, what we're going to see is, God says, listen, you're 6'7", so we've got to put a handicap on you. You've got to carry 10 pounds on your back. And you spent the years as an acrobat, so we're putting handcuffs on your ankles. Each person will get particular qualities that are designed for him from his creation and only for him. That's the difference of this category and the next. This category is categories. This chapter is about categories. And depending upon the choices you make, you fit into one or the other, and it's conceivable that everybody will fit in one or everybody will fit in the other. Yes, that's quite right. Could very well be. Just that the system is set up so that it's very, very difficult to commit spiritual suicide. It's very, very difficult. That's why I say it's a small percentage. That means you'll see in this chapter and the next that the provisions that God created in order to enable people to succeed are very, very far-reaching. In particular, I'll just leave you with this. In particular, it's not determined by the majority of your actions. A person can have a majority of evil actions and still make it. You have 80% evil actions and still make it. You have 92% evil actions and still make it. And the evil actions have to be premeditated, deliberate, knowing choices, not accidents or due to ignorance. And there's even a way for a person who, by his own actions, qualifies for the 0.001%, still to make it because it's connected to a big tzaddik who somehow can pull him in on his coattails. I mean, there's so many different ways to get people in that it's going to be extremely, extremely rare for a person to be left out. Now, I must tell you, in other writings, Ronchal says that nobody's left out. And I've asked people about this, and I've not gotten any satisfactory answer. It seems that there is a contradiction between what he wrote in different places. So I don't know what to say about
that. Well, you said yourself that it's a general.
No, no, no. But there, over there, he says that it's set up in such a way that no one can be lost. That's what it seems to say. So whether he changed his mind, which could well be, or whether I'm missing the perspective, you know, the book from this side and the book from that side, I'm not sure. I've asked people about this, and I've not gotten the satisfaction. Okay.